I'm Hugh Bennett for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Our cover story this week, Creating Safety. Dennis Kelly says employers should be proactive to limit risks of workplace violence. Before the cover story, we'll read the Biz section and the reporter pages first. The Biz section is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. His main story this week, Chic Bistro provides a lift for Littleton. The mayor of a small town not far from Lake Gaston remembers a lot of head shaking when a native son announced he'd put a first-rate restaurant in town. But now Littleton, thanks to the Blue Jay Bistro and investments from Ed Fitz, is seeing a remarkable resurgence. Our storefronts don't stay empty very long. That's a good thing. Mayor Heidi Hogan says, I have to attribute that to Ed Fitz and his investment in the town. He took a chance. Hogan and her husband were living in Northern Virginia when, exasperated by traffic, they bought a historic house in Littleton 2 decades ago. Back then, going to dinner meant driving 16 miles to Roanoke Rapids. That changed in 2021 when Ed and Deb Fitz opened the Blue Jay Bistro, a nod to the mascot of the now-closed Littleton High School. Fitz graduated from NC State University in 1961 and shot up the ranks in the world of packaging. A generous Wolfpack donor, Fitz has turned his attention to Littleton in recent years, with the bistro leading the revival similar to what Chef and the Farmer did for Kinston. The Fitz have opened coffee and wine businesses in addition to other investments in the town. Hogan says the main business district of Littleton has about 40 storefronts, and a fourth of those were empty a few years ago. Now only two are vacant. The town's general fund, just $600,000 5 years ago, has swelled to nearly $800,000. The town even has outdoor concerts, and a recent one drew 1,400 people, Hogan says, astounding for a town of 680. The town now has professionals like a dentist and a lawyer, and a craft brewery open soon. Hogan is especially grateful that young families are settling in Littleton, drawn by the amenities it offers. It's amazing with the chance Fitz took that it worked, Hogan says. The key is other businesses followed, and the right businesses followed. We were fortunate in that aspect, and families followed. Now, she says, you can hear kids dribbling basketballs, a sound that was lost when the town was dying. Duke is offering a new experience at football games. Duke University is the latest school to look at premium options with a plan to offer a new Devil's Deck at Wallace Wade Stadium this fall. The Sports Business Journal reports that the area has no reserved seating and includes 7 sections at the north end of the stadium. The all-inclusive area is designed for individual fans and groups and is devoid of reserved seating. The free-flowing Devil's Deck, spanning 7 sections of the stadium's north end zone, will feature cornhole games, lounge furniture, and a rotating cast of in-game DJs at the heart of the space. Tickets are $35 for students and $45 for others, with beer and hard seltzers for sale at the deck. Another chicken franchise targets the Triangle. The Triangle has been adding chicken-related franchises in rapid succession, with Raising Cane's opening in Chapel Hill and Chicken Salad Chick opening in Cary and Raleigh. And now a Kansas group is targeting the growing market. Chicken Max is looking to open 10 to 15 new fast-casual chicken restaurants in the Triangle through its franchise business model. Unemployment ticks up slightly in North Carolina in June. A handful of Triangle counties make up the roughly dozen that had above a 5% unemployment rate in North Carolina in June, per new numbers from the NC Department of Commerce. Statewide, North Carolina's unemployment rate was 4.1% for June, up from the 3.5% in May and 3.6% in June of 2023. Of North Carolina's 100 counties, 14 had unemployment rates between 5% and 10%. Those included Nash, 5.2%, Vance, 6%, and Wilson, 6.1%. Scotland County, located in the southern part of the state and sharing a border with South Carolina, had the highest unemployment rate for June at 7%. Colliers adds experienced local executive. After more than 2 years as managing director for Longfellow Real Estate Partners for North Carolina, Greg Capps is tackling a new role. Capps has joined the Colliers Occupier Services team in Raleigh as executive vice president. He will focus on life sciences and biotechnology. Capps has more than 16 years of experience in life sciences, developing and planning. His level of expertise and experience aligns directly with our goals, and with his proven track record, we know he will be a great addition, says Brian Johnson, market leader at Colliers. Before being managing director for Longfellow, Capps was director of leasing for 3 years. Before joining Longfellow, he was a managing director at Newmark. Turning to the retail and restaurants section, which is written by Kate Tracy, breakfast joint intrigues investor. A Raleigh businessman is making the transition from laundromats and dry cleaning to serving breakfast, brunch, and lunch. Tahir Kakar is opening new Eggs Up Grill locations in Raleigh at 6820 Davis Circle off Millbrook Road near Glenwood Avenue and 10501 Shadow Lawn Drive in North Raleigh. He could also open as many as 8 additional locations in the future. Eggs Up Grill has restaurants in Apex, Holly Springs, Fuquay, Verena, Garner, and Clayton, but not in Raleigh. Kakar's first Eggs Up Grill will be a 4,200-square-foot space in the Davis Circle building that he owns. The space was formerly Kakar's dry cleaning business, which has since closed. That's a very good location. It's all surrounded by rooftops and restaurants, apartments, houses, townhouses. It's just in the middle of everything. It's so easy for people to come out and have breakfast, Kakar says. Kakar plans to open that location in October and North Raleigh in November. He's been operating dry cleaning and laundromat businesses in the Triangle for 23 years. At one point, he had 12 locations. Now he operates 6 businesses. During the pandemic, Kakar began searching for a new venture and started researching franchises and food businesses. One day, he went to an Eggs Up Grill in Holly Springs with his family. When I went there, it just blew my mind. The service, the quality of the food, and everything was phenomenal. Everything was so great, he says. Eggs Up Grill is based in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Kakar signed up to open 10 total locations, and his longtime business partner, Pankaj Parmar, is joining him. Kakar plans to have all 10 of his locations open in the Triangle within the next 5 to 6 years. The franchise fee for each location is $39,000 with a 5% royalty fee. Wake Forest Shopping Center sells for $15.6 million. Seeking to bolster its real estate in the Triangle, a global investment firm has bought a shopping center in Wake Forest for $15.6 million. Heritage Station, a Harris Teeter-anchored shopping center at the corner of Rogers and Forestville Roads, sold to Nuveen, a TIAA company with offices across the globe. Ryan Bone, head of U.S. retail and mixed-use transactions at Nuveen, says his firm was working on the transaction for the past 2 months and plans to keep the property for the long term. Among the aspects that attracted Nuveen to the property was Harris Teeter's presence at the shopping center. We love the location of this property, the affluent customer base that it serves in the area, and the tenancy that exists here today, he says. That Harris Teeter there does strong sales volume, which is something we look for in all the grocery-anchored properties we acquire. The 72,946-square-foot shopping center is 100% leased, Bone says. The seller is ShopCore Properties of San Diego. The value of the 7.26-acre property is $13 million per Wake County records. Built in 2004, it last sold in 2009 for $10.8 million. Nuveen also owns the Alexander Place Retail Center in Northwest Raleigh, Bone says. Nuveen is looking to expand the number of grocery-anchored retail centers it owns in the Triangle. And Raleigh interior design firm is expanding. After 7 years in business, a luxury interior designer in Raleigh is going into expansion mode after building a multi-million-dollar operation. Alisa Sparks, founder of Linden Creek, is franchising her interior design and home staging company. One of those locations will open in the Cary and Apex area, while another franchisee is opening in Charlotte. Eventually, the goal is to have franchises across the country. Sparks says Linden Creek was experiencing so much demand coming from our Raleigh office that we had to say no oftentimes of our schedule booked us so far out that we couldn't serve our clients the way we wanted to. And so we saw this as a really great growth opportunity. The market for luxury homes in the Triangle has taken off as the region has attracted wealthy buyers from across the country. And the booming economy has created new millionaires looking to invest in high-end homes. Sparks launched Linden Creek in 2017. The business grew from $131,000 in revenue the first year to $2.2 million in 2023. Linden Creek focuses on the design and staging of luxury homes, a market that Sparks says is growing at a ferocious pace in the Triangle and is an unmet niche in Raleigh. The business will stage anywhere from 35 homes at once. Reporter Zach Ezone brings us the healthcare and life sciences section. Pfizer cuts to hit hundreds in North Carolina. Pfizer has informed North Carolina officials that it plans to close select manufacturing operations at its massive facilities in Rocky Mount and Sanford, resulting in hundreds of layoffs. The closures will result in the global pharmaceutical company terminating about 210 employees from the two facilities, including 150 workers in Sanford and 60 in Rocky Mount. The July 24th notice to the NC Department of Commerce says these closures have begun, with some employees' work ending on July 31st. The formal layoffs will occur 60 days later, Pfizer said in its worker adjustment and retraining notification. The facilities are located at 4285 North Wesleyan Boulevard in Rocky Mount and 4300 Oak Park Road in Sanford. Prior to the layoffs, the company had about 2,769 employees in Rocky Mount and about 1,577 employees at its facilities in Sanford. Pfizer also confirmed July 30th it is evaluating the potential sale of a manufacturing facility in Sanford after the company's recent decision to discontinue development of a gene therapy candidate that fell short in a crucial late-stage clinical trial. Pfizer acquired the biologics drug substance production facility from Abzena, a contract development and manufacturing organization, early last year. At the time, Pfizer anticipated that the facility, which was still under construction, would employ about 300 people by 2025. The layoffs follow Pfizer launching a multi-year cost-cutting program. The company, in a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission on May 22nd, said the first phase of this program is expected to deliver savings of about $1.5 billion by the end of 2027. Pfizer spokesperson Stephen Danahy says changes in Rocky Mount are a result of lower projected product demand and ongoing site modernization efforts. The company is discontinuing its large volume solutions business and instead shifting production to a contract manufacturing organization. Maryland CRE firm moves into the market. A Maryland commercial real estate firm has gained a foothold in the Triangle by acquiring the headquarters of a local contract development and manufacturing organization. A joint venture between South Duval of Rockville, Maryland, and the private equity firm Allidade Capital acquired Med Farm's roughly 96,000-square-foot biomanufacturing facility at 4018 Stirrup Creek Drive in Durham. JLL represented the seller in the roughly $27.6 million deal. Vice President Matt Brown says South Duval, which focuses on life sciences and technology sectors, has been interested in the Triangle for years. But despite this interest, South Duval had previously struggled to penetrate the market. For starters, the company had to spend time learning the market with its focus on biomanufacturing, as opposed to Maryland, which has a heavy concentration of early-stage research and development operations. Additionally, the cost for life sciences space in the Triangle increased in recent years, especially through 2022. Those numbers were getting to levels that we weren't comfortable with, Brown says, but there has since been a reset in real estate values. For South Duval, the pricing of this project made sense. The decision to acquire the facility was also a matter of timing and opportunity. Raleigh's Red Hill gets cash jolt, and that is Red Hill, not Red Hat. A pharmaceutical company in Raleigh in need of capital has reached an agreement that provides it with millions in cash and removes a lien against its sole commercial product. Red Hill Biopharma recently announced a termination agreement that eliminates all burdens related to a previous divestment and credit agreement. As a result, the company says it received about $9.9 million in cash and gained full control over about $740,000 held in a restricted account. Red Hill says it has reached a deal with Movantic Acquisition Company, Valinor Pharma LLC, and HCR Red Hill SPV LLC. Entities related to healthcare royalty partners to end existing credit ties and remove the Talicia lien. We're very pleased to reach this smooth conclusion, which strengthens Red Hill's cash position and greatly enhances our ability to manage our cash, says Red Hill Chief Financial Officer Rozzy Ingbear. Red Hill in 2023 reached an agreement to transfer its drug Movantic, its top revenue source at the time, to healthcare royalty partners of Connecticut. The deal extinguished all of Red Hill's debt obligations from a credit agreement the two parties signed in 2020. Red Hill received $30 million from the credit agreement to support its commercial operations and another $50 million to fund the acquisition of Movantik from the global biotech AstraZeneca. Kaylee Thompson brings us the real estate and development section of the Triangle Business Journal. Her top story this week, Glen Lake 3 adds three new tenants. More office tenants have signed on for a new office building in Raleigh, bringing it closer to stabilization. Highwoods Properties has signed three companies for about 21,000 square feet combined in the Glen Lake 3 building along Edwards Mill Road. The Real Estate Investment Trust signed all of the leases in the second quarter. Glen Lake 3 is now 34% leased. The 205,000 square foot building opened at Glen Lake Office Park near Crabtree Valley Mall in October of 2023. It's the sixth office building in the park, which now has about 1 million square feet of office space. We're encouraged. We've got another seven quarters before we propose that it'll be stabilized, and we think we'll probably beat that even in a tougher environment, says Skip Hill, Senior Vice President and Raleigh Market Lead for Highwoods. The vacancy rate for Class A office space in the Triangle was 17% in the second quarter, according to Triangle Business Journal's Space publication, up from 15.6% in the first quarter. Maryland's ACT Talent, an engineering services and talent solutions organization, signed on for 13,000 square feet at Glen Lake 3 and is moving from its space at 6501 Weston Parkway in Cary. It will move into the fourth floor in October. Tech Systems, a management consulting firm headquartered in Maryland, added 5,000 square feet to the 18,000 square feet it was already filling in the building. The firm moved from the Wade Office Park to the third floor at Glen Lake 3 in December. Implement Consulting, a pharmaceutical and life sciences consulting firm based in Copenhagen, signed on for 3,000 square feet on the first floor. Implement Consulting moved into the space in June. Its offices at Glen Lake are its first in the region. Part of the Glen Lake Office Park is a retail space that will house Crooked Hammock Brewery of Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. More warehouse space is on the way in Apex. More industrial space is being built in the Triangle despite the rising vacancy rate. KA Property Holdings, NC LLC, has filed new site plans with the City of Raleigh for an industrial building near Raleigh-Durham International Airport. The entity has an Apex address, and the registered agent is Saravanakumar Chandran. The plans call for a light industrial warehouse that can hold multiple tenants. The single-story building will have 24,995 square feet of warehouse and office space. It will also have 49 parking spaces, three of which will be trailer spaces. Chandran could not be reached for comment. The industrial building will be at 3601 Page Road on 2.13 acres outside Interstate 540 and west of Briar Creek. The property is vacant and has an assessed value of $156,550. KA Property Holdings NC acquired the site for $400,000 in 2021. Home builder has more plans for Holly Springs. An Ohio home builder has identified land in southwest Wake County for a new subdivision. MI Homes has filed a rezoning request with a master plan with the town of Holly Springs for 56 acres off Cass Holt Road, southwest of the town's core. The proposed zoning is neighborhood residential with conditions. The current zoning is rural residential. The plans don't list the total number of homes, but do indicate that the home builder is proposing 5 units per acre. That would mean about 280 single-family homes and townhomes. The plans also show that the minimum lot size is 5,000 square feet. The acreage on two parcels adjacent to MI Homes' Honeycutt Farms community. Homes at Honeycutt Farms start in the 300,000s. And in western Wake County, Apex plans reveal upscale $1 million homes. A collection of higher-end homes is proposed for Apex as the town continues to grow and attract high earners. Developer Mike Jordan, under his Ashburn Development LLC, has filed a rezoning application along with a residential master subdivision plan with the town for 79 homes. The subdivision will be called Ashburn and will sit along Mount Zion Church Road near the Apex Friendship Schools and Apex Nature Park. Jordan is applying to rezone the 15.3 acres from rural residential to a planned unit development. The subdivision plan shows there will be 21 single-family homes and 58 townhomes. The single-family homes will have four bedrooms and will be between 2,000 and 4,000 square feet. Filings with the Wake County Public School System show that the price range for the single-family homes will be $550,000 to $1.1 million. The townhomes will have three bedrooms and range between 1,600 and 3,000 square feet. Prices will range from $495,000 to $900,000. Many new residents in Apex are wealthy. The median household income in Apex is now around $130,000, according to census data, up from around $111,000 in 2019. The site for Ashburn will be on two unaddressed parcels on Mount Zion Church Road. Ben Tobin is here to tell us about happenings in the Greater Triangle area. Kentucky firm invests in Chatham County. A custom home builder has paid millions of dollars for lots in an upcoming luxury neighborhood in Chatham County. Drees Homes of Kentucky paid nearly $3 million for 18 lots in the Corbett Landing subdivision, according to Chatham County deed records. The subdivision will consist of 114 single-family homes spanning about 200 acres off Old Graham Road, just minutes from downtown Pittsburgh. Drees will offer 49 home sites at Corbett Landing, says Sarah Petracco, Director of Communications and Social Media for Drees Homes. Pricing begins in the low $800,000s and ranges to $1 million plus. Petracco says the home builder is now offering build-to-order homes for prospective buyers. Drees Homes will have company from other home builders in the subdivision. Ford Dupree, president of the Chapel Hill-based Rexford Group, the developer of the project, said in October 2023 that homes by Dickerson of Raleigh and Rexford Group will also build homes for the neighborhood. Homes sales for the development are underway. Dupree previously called the upcoming neighborhood a unicorn, saying there's nothing like this in the area. The lots will be 1.8 acres, which will help ensure the privacy of those in the neighborhood and residences already on Old Graham Road, according to Dupree. When we came into Pittsburgh, it was always our intention to maintain the integrity of the rural area that we bought the land in, Dupree said then. I wasn't interested in high density. I wanted low density. So by design, it was important that all adjoins around the property still had their privacy. With the population now above 81,000, Chatham County has seen major growth over the past couple of years, with the U.S. Census Bureau estimating the county has jumped in population by 4.7%. Along with that growth has come the proliferation of luxury single-family homes for people looking for more space and a slower pace of life, especially retirees. In Moore County, project near Pinehurst No. 10 adds new homes. A neighborhood right across the street from the new Pinehurst No. 10 golf course is set to get some new homes. Cavendish Land Development, a Rayford home builder, recently paid over $1 million to acquire the remaining 24 lots of Winds Way Farm, a neighborhood off Linden Road and North Carolina Highway 5, according to Moore County deed records. Amy Stonecipher, a real estate agent with Maison Realty Group, which is selling homes for Winds Way Farm, says the acquisition is for the third and final phase of the neighborhood, bringing the total amount of homes to 110. The 86 homes from the first two phases are complete, she says. Several lots have been pre-sold, and we have four spec homes currently under construction, with an expected completion date between November and December, Stonecipher says. Our homes range in size from 2,325 to 3,300 square feet, with options for two- or three-car garages. While the exact pricing is still to be determined, we anticipate prices to fall within the high 400s to low 600s, depending on the specific plan and garage count. Stonecipher says the neighborhood features a plethora of amenities, from green spaces to a pool to a covered picnic area, as well as numerous mature trees and lush greenery. As young people join retirees in moving to Moore County, the area will continue to grow. The county's population sat at just shy of 107,000 in July of 2023. In Lee County, buyers throw big money at Sanford land. Out-of-state investors are dropping seven figures for land targeted for a new subdivision in one of North Carolina's hottest areas, and they're paying double the appraised value for the property. Phantom Ranch LLC, which is linked to Sun Magnolia LLC of Illinois, as well as Marigold Acres of Oregon, purchased 86.3 acres off White Hill Road, southwest Sanford, for $1 million earlier this month, according to Lee County deed records. The appraised value for the land spread across two tracts is a little more than $514,000. The property is targeted for housing. Triangle Business Journal reported in May that preliminary plans show a 29-home subdivision on the land off White Hill Road. The plans were submitted by Martha Bright, an engineer with Stanford civil engineering firm Ken Bright Associates. It's unclear why the buyers purchased the land, as contact information was not available in business filings. According to the application, the average lot size will be 65,618 square feet. That's roughly 1.5 acres per lot. Additionally, site plans call for open space and a clubhouse. Sanford is constantly attracting new housing developments. For example, Raleigh's R&R development recently filed new plans for two townhome communities. Let's turn now to the cover story this week. Our cover this week is about concerns the Project Life series on executive health and worker wellness in the Triangle. Efforts to make workplaces safer. Workplace violence affects thousands of workers each year, but tools such as being proactive and educating workers can help mitigate that. Our article is written by Connie Gentry. Hundreds of people die as a result of workplace violence in the U.S. every year. The National Safety Council reported 524 fatalities due to workplace assaults in 2022. Additionally, thousands of workers are seriously impacted in workplace violence every year. In 2020, while many worked from home, there were still more than 20,000 workers who were injured in workplace violence, according to the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, that's NIOSH, and this is just for the private sector. Public sector workers such as law enforcement are not included in that count. As for the severity of those workplace incidents, one in five victims required 31 or more days away from work to recover. Another 22% were out of work for 3 to 5 days. The U.S. Department of Labor says workplace violence entails not only physical harm, but also acts of harassment, intimidation, or any threatening, disruptive behavior. NIOSH categorizes the violence into four occurrences: those resulting from criminal intent, interactions between customers and clients, worker-on-worker conflicts, and personal relationships, which involve women at a much higher rate than men. Acts of war or terrorism are not defined as elements of workplace violence. While women are more likely to be impacted by non-fatal incidents, accounting for 73% of the trauma victims, men are more often the victims of workplace homicides. More than 80% of fatalities are male. Despite these grim statistics, security measures in the workplace are providing both safety and peace of mind. Retired military or law enforcement are often recruited into corporate security, but it doesn't have to be a former Navy SEAL standing guard in your lobby. It could be a recent college grad with a degree in sociology, someone with a passion for service and a keen interest in security. That was Dennis Kelly 32 years ago when he started down the career path that ultimately led him to be chief executive seat at Sun State Security, where he leads a team of roughly 6,000 employees, the vast majority working in frontline security positions. When he joined Sun States in 2010, the company had 350 employees. Today, the firm manages global security operations centers for clients with international footprints, conducting threats analysis, risk mitigation, executive protection, and emergency responses, continually working to secure and protect their clients' assets and people. The number one thing you can do is be proactive rather than reactive. Setting things up properly in a preventive nature can help mitigate risk down the road, Kelly says. Sun States advises clients to educate their employees on being proactive as well, noting that associates can often identify coworkers who might seem troubled, disgruntled, or behaving out of character, potential warning signs that would need to be reported through proper channels to HR. That's what Red Hat does. We have mechanisms for associates to report security or safety incidents to our Security Operations Center, and our team is staffed globally 24/7, 365. So someone is always going to respond to the email alias we set up as a reporting mechanism or pick up the phone if someone calls, says John Stevens, Regional Safety and Security Manager for the Americas. Red Hat has security delegated across four global regions, and each regional manager serves as the primary point of contact for any safety-related incident that might impact its people, whether they are in one of the corporate offices, traveling, or attending an event. Since the pandemic, Red Hat has reduced its real estate footprint as more of their associates continue to work in a hybrid model, but the scope of its security services has expanded beyond its office settings to include increased support for traveling associates and for Red Hat's customers or marketing events. the world can be pretty volatile, so we monitor incidents globally, and if there's an incident that presents a potential or actual risk to a Red Hat traveler or a group of employees, we have mechanisms in place to alert them and partners in place to support them throughout an incident if it's appropriate to do so, Stevens says. Effective corporate security and strong incident response and management is dependent on the partnerships that are built, and Stevens points to external partnerships such as the vendor partnership they have with SunStates, as well as internal partnerships. Being able to establish those partnerships with your HR team, your legal team, and your facilities operations teams, building those connections within Red Hat so if an incident occurs, we can activate the right teams and get to the right people involved to help us manage the incident. That all flows out of a good security strategy, Stevens says. Beyond taking a proactive stance to ensure that you have a secure environment, businesses should also have the capability of locking down a building if an incident occurs, advises Kelly. The first thing to do is notify law enforcement, he says. Even in an active shooter situation, it's been shown that pretty much all of the activity happens within the first 3 minutes. It happens quick. But the first contact emergency responders have with the business shouldn't be when there's an incident. Stevens says the partnerships Red Hat has built with the city of Raleigh, the Raleigh Police Department, and all of the city's emergency response services are crucial, particularly given the company's downtown location. Good security is not heroics, it is relationships and strategy and collaboration with those partners to mitigate risk and to effectively manage any security-related incidents, Stevens says. It's pretty standard practice for corporate security managers to make sure they have contacts with their municipalities, with law enforcement, and with emergency services, because you just never know what's going to go on, and you need that support. As demand for security services has escalated, SunState Security has consistently experienced 25% annual revenue growth each year over the past decade, and the company's co-founders, Catherine and Glenn Burrell, remain involved as joint chairpersons of the firm's leadership board. Security is always most successful when businesses are proactive, Kelly says, but there are shifts in focus depending on what's trending at any given time across the country. Now the focus is on service, making sure we're providing a welcoming environment as corporations try to get people back into the office. Security personnel in the manufacturing or regulated environment will be outfitted in uniforms that evoke images of authority, but in Class A office towers, they're more likely to wear business suits, presenting with what Kelly describes as a concierge vibe. Recently, SunState Security has also invested in a risk management platform that can be customized to each client, with security assessments specific to each site in the client's enterprise. The technology provided by Circadian Risk reduced risk management costs by 20% in the first year it was implemented by Spartan Nash, a Michigan-based food distributor and retailer with 20 distribution centers and 150 stores. Project Life exists to shed light on executive health and worker wellness. The series includes regular articles on worker stress, work anxiety, depression, and addiction-related issues that creep into the workplace, and personality features from executives that are on the forefront of this fight for better health in our workplaces. The Viewpoint section this week has a guest columnist, John Hood of the John Locke Foundation, who is a frequent contributor. NC doesn't overcharge drivers. Our state levies a motor fuels tax of 40.65 cents per gallon. This is one of the highest rates in the nation. But don't jump to conclusions. North Carolina doesn't spend more on highways than the average state, and motorists aren't being overcharged. With so much data accessible online, it's easy to assemble state-by-state comparisons of taxes, expenditures, and amenities. My email inbox is crammed with releases from interest groups and public relations firms. What's hard to assemble are useful comparisons. The most common error is to ignore structure differences among the states. In North Carolina, for example, most public school funding comes from state income and sales taxes, not property taxes. Indeed, the latter makes up 26% of per pupil expenditures in our state, and the national average is 44%. Similarly, we have no county road systems. That distinguishes us from most other states. Our municipalities do own and maintain their own street grids, but even in this case, many of the most traveled roads within cities and towns are actually state highways that the municipalities service and repair as contractors for the state. These aren't just technical arrangements. Most state expenditures on highways are financed by taxing fuels, registering autos, or licensing drivers. Most local expenditures are financed with property and sales taxes. So, yes, North Carolinians pay higher taxes at the pump. At the same time, for the same reason, we pay lower taxes on the value of the property we own and other goods and services we buy. The difference is substantial. According to a recent Tax Foundation analysis, direct charges to motorists, fuel taxes, licenses, tolls, and other user fees pay for just over half of state and local road spending in the United States. That's 51%. In North Carolina, direct charges to motorists finance 65%. Only five other states have a higher proportion. That's why focusing only on gas taxes can be misleading. It leaves out the higher taxes people in other states pay to fund their roads. I will go further than that, however. I think North Carolina should be commended for relying as much as we do on the user pays principle for highways. I'd like us to go further in this direction rather than raiding general revenues to fund highways or raiding highway revenues to fund other things. So no, North Carolinians don't pay more than others do for roads. Indeed, I have even better news than that. We get a better bang for the buck on the dollars we pay. For many years, the California-based Reason Foundation has published a report on state highway performance. Its latest study ranked North Carolina second in the nation in cost effectiveness. We have relatively low administrative costs and fare well in comparisons to traffic congestion, pavement condition, and fatality rates. North Carolina does rank worse than average in structurally deficient bridges, although even here we've improved somewhat in recent years. Many problems deserve our attention. Being gouged at the pump by our own state isn't one of them. If you care to reach Mr. Hood, he can be reached at jhood, J-H-O-O-D, at johnlocke, that's John, L-O-C-K-E, .org. As part of its executive voice series, the TBJ interviewed Mark Balling this week. He's the general manager and executive vice president at Skanska. Armed with more than three decades in the construction industry, Mark Balling leans into that knowledge as he tackles his duties as head of Skanska's North Carolina and Virginia region. It's a role he's now settled into after previously serving in other roles at the company since 2015. Skanska is the second largest general contracting firm in the Triangle, based on its 2023 local gross billings figure of $434.8 million. The company specializes in healthcare, education, corporate, life sciences, and municipal projects in the area, where it employs about 170. What led you to this position? I took the role of general manager of Skanska's North Carolina and Virginia region in June 2023. I joined Skanska in 2015 as vice president account manager, and 3 years later was promoted to senior vice president account manager, responsible for all work in Virginia across multiple market sectors, as well as our projects with Duke University and NC State University. Before joining Skanska, I spent more than two decades in a position similar to general manager with another firm in upstate New York. What local projects excite you? There are so many to choose from locally. We have two projects in Durham Technical Community College, multiple projects at Duke University, the Integrative Sciences Building at NC State, Wake County Public Health, and the Raleigh Convention Center expansion, including the Red Hat Amphitheater relocation. They're all pretty exciting. How has AI impacted your business? We've been using AI to help us manage information to avoid surprises and make us more efficient. We have a growing group of Skanska professionals involved in our data solutions team, focused on the major aspects of data harvesting and using a variety of data point measurements across various project types and sectors to better benchmark comparable projects from a design and cost perspective. This is especially critical since volatility still exists within certain trades. We're also using AI in pre-construction to improve the quality of our bid documents. We're also deploying robots for construction site photography, and we continue to find ways to incorporate AI to help make our sites even safer. What are the greatest challenges you see? The level of experience of our workforce continues to be a major challenge, so finding more workers with appropriate training is a never-ending effort. What are your goals for Skanska locally? We've been fortunate to be selected on multiple large and challenging projects that have significantly increased our revenue. Our short-term goal is to continue to deliver for our clients through a mixture of veteran staff and strategic new hires. Our longer-term strategy has us breaking into new markets, expanding our geographic footprint in North Carolina, and continuing to support succession planning by promoting our future leaders who are already long-term Skanska employees. What has been your greatest challenge? The demands in construction these days place an increasing amount of stress on my people. We're always finding ways to recognize their hard work as well as ways to ease their burden by working smarter and more efficiently. What has been your greatest triumph? The pandemic created tremendous pressure on meeting client budgets due to extreme escalation in materials and labor. I'm proud that we've successfully worked through these challenges. What do you do to relax? I love the outdoors, whether it's work or play. I relax by filling the role of groundskeeper at home, but also finding interesting places to travel to locally and out of town. In news around the state, Cary's Fenton lands 7-story mainsail hotel. Cary's massive Fenton development is finally getting its first hotel. The popular entertainment destination off Carytown Boulevard will add a 7-story hotel to its mix of retail, restaurants, apartments, and offices. Mainsail Lodging and Development is planning a 186-key hotel, a $70 million project that's 2 years in the making, according to Joe Collier, Mainsail's president and founder. Fenton's developer, Houston-based Hines, has teased that a hotel would be in the mix at Fenton for some time now, in addition to a second hotel in a future phase. The hotel, which does not have a name yet, will be Mainsail's first in North Carolina. The company developed and owns multiple hotels in Florida, Georgia, and the Caribbean. Pending approvals from the town of Cary, the Fenton project will break ground in early 2025 and open in early 2027. Collier says Fenton was an ideal location for its first North Carolina hotel because of the strength of the partnerships with the firms involved, including Hines, Affinius Capital, and Columbia Development. Plus, the location near Interstate 40 was attractive as well, as was Fenton's walkability and the number of amenities. The complex that we're moving into is the kind of thing we look for in the hotel space. You don't want to be isolated with a lifestyle-type hotel. You want to be a destination, because as much as we do business, travelers, and groups, we do a lot of leisure at our hotels, Collier says. Mainsail has signed a 100-year ground lease for the future hotel site. BRPH is the architect on the project, but Mainsail has yet to select a general contractor. Among the amenities at the new hotel will be a second-floor restaurant and bar, a bar and coffee shop in the lobby. In manufacturing news, VinFast's future in Chatham County remains cloudy. Ben Tobin tells us about this. Despite VinFast falling years behind on its promise to deliver an electric vehicle manufacturing plant to North Carolina, local and state leaders say they remain committed to the project. But some are likely exploring other options to be prepared if the company drops the project entirely. The Vietnamese auto company says it's made the strategic decision to push the timeline for production to begin on its $4 billion, 7,500-job plant to 2028. The company originally said in 2022 that the plant would be operational by the end of 2024. VinFast, part of the Vin Group conglomerate, has struggled to make significant inroads in the North American auto market. It's been hampered by poor vehicle reviews and an overall slowdown in the growth of EV sales. On top of that, the company has been losing hundreds of millions of dollars each quarter. VinFast did not provide a comment for the story. Meanwhile, the state has already spent tens of millions on work related to the site in southeast Chatham County. The North Carolina General Assembly appropriated a $450 million incentives package to VinFast for the project in the summer of 2022. That appropriation includes up to $125 million for site preparation, $250 million for road work, and $75 million to the city of Sanford to expand water and sewer infrastructure to the Triangle Innovation Point megasite near Moncure. So far, North Carolina has spent $95.7 million per David Rhodes, the spokesman for the North Carolina Department of Commerce, $51.7 million for site preparation, $28.4 million for road work, and $15.6 million for water and sewer. Additionally, North Carolina granted VinFast a job development investment grant, that's JDIG, of $316.2 million, but no funds are paid out of those performance-based grants until certain hiring and investment targets are made. The state does have protections in place if VinFast does not make significant progress in North Carolina. According to a claw-back provision from a site development agreement signed in July of 2022, VinFast would have to reimburse the state for up to $125 million for the site preparation work if the company fails to create 3,875 jobs by the end of 2026. Additionally, per an option to purchase real estate signed in November 2022, if VinFast doesn't create 1,750 jobs by the end of 2026 or start operations by July 2026, North Carolina has the option to buy back all or parts of the 1,765-acre site. But at the moment, the state is staying the course with VinFast. The state's commitment to VinFast's project has not changed, and neither have the strong protections we put in place from the beginning that guard the state's investment in the project site, Rhodes said. And Chatham Economic Development Corp. President Michael Smith says, "We're continuing to stay in contact with company officials and look forward to their future success in Chatham County." John Boyd, Jr., a site selection expert principal of the Boyd Company of New Jersey, says that it is hard to say if North Carolina would choose to buy back the land due to the intricacies involved in such a complicated real estate deal, not to mention the fact that a new governor and a new economic development team will be in place in Raleigh in July of 2026. That said, if it serves state taxpayer interest or if it makes sense to precipitate other economic development with wind for Chatham County, buying land from the site could make perfect sense and should be carried out, Boyd says. Other contenders that could make sense for the site include companies in the biologics and biotech space, as well as automotive and aerospace advanced manufacturing, he adds. Wisconsin company to close Wilson plant and terminate 70 employees. Less than 3 years after moving in, a packaging company is shuttering its Eastern North Carolina manufacturing plant, affecting dozens of employees in the process. Madison, Wisconsin-based Placon Corp. submitted a worker adjustment and retraining notification filing with the North Carolina Department of Commerce July 24th, saying it is permanently closing its facility located at 2540 Wilco Boulevard in Wilson, effective August 2nd. The move will result in the termination of 70 employees. The reason for the closure is that Placon has experienced a significant drop in sales and revenue company-wide, but especially for the lines of business performed at the Wilson location. Lori Latour, Placon's Vice President of Human Resources and Safety, wrote in the filing, "All affected employees have been notified." Latour said that for any employees who stay through the entire 60-day notice period until September 22nd, the company will provide them with a retention bonus on their final paycheck. A select group of employees will remain on site until November 22, 2024, to oversee the closure of the facility and to ensure a smooth transition, the Warren says. Latour did not respond to requests for comment. This marks the end of a short stint for Placon at the facility. Triangle Business Journal reported in October 2021 that they would be moving into and expanding the facility, which is 112,000 square feet. The site was previously run by Sunoco Products. Placon said that it had reached an agreement to purchase substantially all of their operating equipment. Placon isn't the only company shuttering an Eastern North Carolina plant. Weyerhaeuser submitted a Warren filing with the state on July 18th, saying it will shut down its New Bern lumber mill off Highway 43 north of New Bern. The Craven County plant will close by September 16th, and most employees will be laid off. The guidelines column is written by Jim Berdonick. Helpful advice: be careful using AI-generated images. I can write, but I'm lousy at drawing, so I'm using OpenAI's DALL-E image generator to create images for a book I'm writing. Here are a few guidelines for using AI-generated images. Do you have a copyright? Machines that create images or words don't have copyrights for the product. That means you don't have a copyright on what AI produces for you. Anyone is free to copy and reuse your image, but you still have a copyright for the words you write that describes the image. If you substantially change AI-generated content, you may have a copyright on the final image. The courts decide how much change is required. Infringing copyrights of others. People who own copyrights are asserting that AI companies have violated their copyright by using their protected images to train AI. If the courts agree, AI companies could be found to violate copyrights. Less obvious is the fact that anyone who then uses the AI-generated content may also be infringing the copyright. Distributors protect themselves. Big book distributors such as Amazon are accepting books that have AI-generated content in them, but require you to tell them your book contains AI-generated content. Their software identifies AI-generated content, and they may remove your book from sales if you don't tell them. If the courts decide that AI-generated content violates someone's copyright, Amazon and other big distributors may remove your book from sales. Fair use doctrine. The fair use exception applies to AI-generated materials, so not every use of copyright-protected materials violates copyrights. For example, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. copyrighted the famous I Have a Dream speech delivered at a massive rally in Washington, D.C. Even though the entire speech was broadcast by news organizations at the time, the speech is still copyright protected. The fair use exception allows use for criticism, comment, news reporting, teaching, scholarship, and research. But other factors come into play, like how much of a copyrighted work is used and how much new work the user adds to the original. So be careful about the prompts you use to instruct AI to create an image. Try to avoid prompts like, create an image that looks like blank. Instead, think about the specific features you want in that image. If you substantially change an AI-generated image, you may have a copyright on the final image. Courts decide how much change is required. Cost-effectiveness. It's not cost-effective for people to sue every copyright infringer. AI software companies are currently the main targets, but Getty Images and others often sue even small users to protect their images. Software. AI is being used to write software. You may not own a copyright to the software that AI generates for you. And marketing materials. One of the biggest uses of AI-generated images is in marketing materials. Marketing is not a use specifically protected by the fair use doctrine. And Jim Verdonik is the founder of Fire Pit Cell LLC and the founder of Innovate Capital Law. You can reach him at jimv, that's V as in Victor, free at gmail.com. jimvfree at gmail. We have a bonus Project Life article this week. This one written by Brooks Bell. I attended the TED conference in Vancouver in April 2022, 3 years after my colon cancer diagnosis. Science journalist Catherine Price's 12-minute talk stayed with me. She had introduced a model on three ingredients to having fun: playfulness, flow, and connection. Price distinguished fun from true fun. She says true fun leads to inner glow and radiant joy, and she explains how to get it and why it's worth having. She was talking about playfulness when she said, I do not mean you have to be playing games. I just mean doing things for the sake of doing them and not caring too much about the outcome. Letting go of perfectionism. When we're having fun, our guard is down and we're not taking ourselves too seriously. I have written before about my chronic perfectionism and its potential negative effects on my health. After hearing her talk, I started to pay attention to fun. Is this fun? Is this playful? I felt like the old Verizon commercial, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? For the most part, the answer was no, not really. I was surprised at how hard this was because I no longer had excuses. I had flexibility, financial security, free time, and friends, as well as newfound purpose around colon cancer prevention, yet I was not having fun. It was easy for my 6-year-old niece to be playful. Why was it easy for her and hard for me? When Price says our guard is down, she's talking about emotional security. Kids play when they feel loved and safe, but that usually changes as you go through puberty. It's a lot harder to be playful once someone has mocked you or laughed at you at school. This guarded feeling can then get internalized. Even when we no longer are bullied at school, we still excel at bullying ourselves. That can be a total fun killer, too. My inner critic was definitely making things harder for me. One of the ways it played out was when my husband and our friends sang karaoke. I dreaded receiving the microphone. I wasn't having fun. But I also felt shame for not being able to loosen up. Learning about the benefits of true fun inspired me to do something about it. Last year, I took 6 months of weekly voice lessons. The first month or two were an excruciating embarrassment. I heard my voice and my ineptitude. But before I knew it, I started to have a glimmer of fun, and then a lot of fun, even just singing to myself in the car. Did my voice get better? Marginally. But more importantly, I was able to silence the critical voice that kept my guard up. For me, learning to sing was a valuable practice of letting go. Price mentioned not taking ourselves too seriously. In other words, assume the stakes are low. It's easy to play when you have nothing to lose. The problem with growing up is that you eventually have a lot to lose: jobs, beauty, health, wealth, freedom, reputation. As a CEO, I felt like I had a lot on the line: money, a high-profile reputation, careers. When I became a cancer patient, it was my life on the line. Stakes felt like they couldn't be higher or more serious. In the process, I had also become accustomed to only taking on projects that I deemed big enough for me. There was considerable ego built into this. I wanted to impress people. I avoided low-stakes activities because they didn't seem good enough for me. I was above having fun. This clearly had to change. Fortunately, Price had a tip. Increase playfulness by finding opportunities to rebel. I'm talking about playful deviance. Break the rules of responsible adulthood and give yourself permission to get a kick out of your own life. Now she's talking. I realized I got a thrill when I parked illegally in downtown Raleigh. I've gotten 2 tickets already. It felt awesome to drop an F-bomb in polite company. Perfectly low stakes and surprisingly joyous. I also started painting again. I learned to play when I felt totally safe and when I realized that I had almost nothing to lose. It's taken me focus and practice and maybe some therapy, too. In the past year, I've had a lot more true fun. I was blissed out on my 44th birthday when I sampled 6 different full-size scoops of ice cream. Banana pudding was my favorite. I can say it's always worth our time to seek out playful joy no matter our place in society or how old we are. We can be mature, responsible, successful, and a little deviant all at the same time. Having had 2 years to reconnect with my inner child, I've decided to start another company. This time it's going to be decidedly low stakes. It's probably not going to make millions, and I'm not going to hire a big staff. I'm doing it with friends, and it supports my colon cancer prevention efforts. It involves butt humor and awkward conversations, and lives will be saved. Happily, the company is going to help people bring a little low-grade deviancy into their lives, too. But most importantly, it's going to be loads of true fun. It already is. We're launching this fall, so stay tuned. Brooks Bell is the founder of Brooks Bell, Inc. You can reach her at brooks@brooksbell.com. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.